I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 High FM. Ronnie says, I feel a little embarrassed saying it, but it really did put a smile on my face. It's funny how some music can do that, and you know that it really shouldn't, because it is just a bit twee.
You just find your leg moving involuntarily, you know, like on your knee.
You know, exactly. You move to the music. All right. Unfortunately, we do have to change tones. There was an incident on Sunday this week. Of course, we don't know all of the details, and nor should we, nor do we need to. In fact, what am I referring to is the alleged suicide, or the apparent suicide, of a young rabbi in Johannesburg, and of course the horror around that type of situation. In fact, David, one of the things that I noticed following the discussion is, we all have this morbid curiosity to understand how. You know, how do they do it? And I was thinking, you know, if somebody dies, God forbid, of cancer, you know, we don't say, so what happened? Did they go into kidney failure? Did their liver stop functioning? You know, give me those details. We don't need to know it, because we accept that cancer is an illness. And when somebody dies from cancer, that we don't necessarily need to know the step-by-step process as to what happened. Yet somehow when it comes to suicide, we all need to know, and I include myself on this, is it's somehow we want to know more details. We feel like we need to know more details. And part of my worry around that is we land up focusing on the person and the event and that, but we don't look at maybe the picture that we should be looking at. And maybe the picture is actually to focus on the real victims of suicide, which are the survivors, which is the family, it's the friends, it's the community, it's people around. They actually are the victims of suicide. It's all very, very confusing. And then we, of course, have got to look at how do we look at our own lives and look at people around us and see who is in trouble and how we could possibly reach out to them.
No, absolutely.
It's a big subject.
It's a huge subject, and such an important and serious subject. And you know, when you think about, you know, certainly not belittling the crisis that we're having with the coronavirus, but when you look at the statistics of how many people take their lives in the world each year, it's 800,000. And that is a huge...
And is it growing?
And it is growing. And I think, but also importantly, I think it's important to point out that 15 million people attempt suicide every year. So the 800,000 only represent those who actually take their lives. And if you think about the actual numbers, it's extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary that is what's happening. It actually works out to every 40 seconds someone in the world takes their life. So that's the extent of the problem, and it is a huge, huge problem.
And we're not winning the war, clearly.
We're not. And I think a lot of us walk around in the world really feeling depressed, not coping, and we don't really say anything about it, and we really keep it to ourselves. I think, unfortunately, there is still, I think, a degree of shame in saying I'm not really coping, or I'm not really feeling good within myself. And I think it's really amazing how high-functioning, intelligent people often don't pick up their own signals and don't pick up the signs that they really are in emotional distress.
Can I try and understand this? Is there's a significant amount of people who suffer from depression. A very small percentage of those people will ultimately take their own lives. Is suicide a part of depression, or is it actually something that stands maybe a little bit aside? In other words, is every person who's depressed at risk for suicide, of suicide, or are there people that might be terribly, terribly depressed and suffered greatly from mental illness or emotional distress, but actually not be one of those people who are at risk?
Well, it's complex, and we talk about, I think it's first important to say that everything's on a continuum. You know, we talk about anxiety, we talk about depression, and I know I always talk about kind of from 1 to 10, And if someone is very, very depressed on the 8, 9, 10 side, then clearly that depression is a lot more overwhelming. But it doesn't always mean that someone's going to, you know, be thinking about taking their lives. It all depends on their mindset. And there definitely are what we call risk factors when we look at an individual to see if they are more susceptible to taking their lives. And I think it's also important to keep in mind that, you know, it's to look for these risk factors and what we call also then warning factors is very important, or warning signs, because of course this is all internal. You know, and people, as I say, don't often, or it's not the norm to talk about one's vulnerability. It's the norm to put one foot in front of the other and move forward. And it's the norm when someone says, how are you, to almost, it's like a reaction. It's a reaction to say, I'm fine. Thank you. You know, everything's good. It's a knee-jerk reaction rather than actually assessing how one's doing. And I just want to say that as I say, very highly intelligent people struggle to identify that they're struggling. And I think it's threefold, three reasons for that. I think the one is that there is a lack of knowledge out there, that to actually read about symptoms of depression and anxiety, what it actually means to be distressed. And I think that's number one. And the other thing is something that we call ego dystonic. And what ego dystonic is when people – you know, experience uncomfortable or unacceptable feelings or distress that they don't really associate it with their self-concept. So, they don't really identify themselves as being vulnerable. And so when they do start to feel vulnerable, you know, they don't identify it clearly. It feels very separate from themselves. And so really it only, kind of, comes to the fore when it's really, really serious.
Also, how do you stop someone from aggregating things? So a lot of some people, including me, when something specific goes wrong in my life at this specific time, I tend to now think back of how many things have gone wrong from way back. What led me to this point? And you kind of, it becomes overwhelming where you literally get to a point where you think that everything's just been pointless. And that's the thing. So by aggregating this stuff, you kind of make something that maybe isn't so bad. It's bad, but it's not that bad.
It's almost like a confirmation bias where you're looking to find confirmation as to why things are so bad and prove to yourself that it actually can't get better.
That's actually the power of therapy and the power of just talking. Because often, Zanati, when we're in our heads and we're sitting alone and we are in that mindset, we do, as you say, confirm that bias, and we do then only see and often can only see the negative. And that's really when things become extreme, when people become suicidal, is because it's like tunnel vision. You can only see things from a negative perspective.
So it's almost like you're being directed towards that goal because there appears to be no way out.
And that's why it's so important. One of the most important things is when you are starting to feel that way, and it is difficult, is to reach out. Because when we talk about it, when we put it out there, often in the majority of situations,
suddenly there's another perspective.
Time
is 8:20. We'll be back after.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Time is 8:23. I'm Howard Feldman in studio with David Abramson. He is a psychologist in private practice, and we're talking about recognizing the signs of somebody being in distress and perhaps being at risk for suicide. David, before we go on to those signs, and that to me is the most critical takeaway point of this conversation, what do we look for? But before we go there, I want to throw a very controversial point out there, and I'd love your thoughts on it. There's no doubt that, and just follow my logic and tell me where I'm perhaps going wrong. There's no doubt that there is an increase in suicide, especially amongst young people. We also know that there is a measure of ideation when it comes to suicides. I know that in a conversation with somebody who a youngster who was at risk, they referred to almost fantasizing about another youngster that we spoke about on the show who took their life, who took his life last year. And there was almost this ideation around that person, the suicide, the attention that they got. Maybe instead of us focusing on the victim afterwards and what they must have gone through, maybe we need to also actually understand or focus on the selfishness of somebody taking their own life. Mm. And now I see, now you're nodding until that point and then you stop nodding. So I know that it's very hard to hear, but ultimately suicide is the most selfish thing you can do. Mm. The family will never get over it. The children or parents or no matter who's involved in it will never get over it. It used to be, and I don't agree with it and I don't advocate it, but it used to be that a person within Judaism who committed suicide wouldn't be buried in a Jewish cemetery. But maybe, and I'm not saying we should go back to it, but maybe there is some wisdom in that. Maybe if somebody knows that they will not be buried in a Jewish cemetery if they're Jewish, if they do this, maybe that prevents it. Maybe if we speak about, if we make people aware that it actually is a very selfish thing to do, maybe that person can have another perspective instead of us being so cautious about how we talk about it, and we should be cautious. Mm-hmm. But maybe we need to introduce that other aspect.
I think there's 2 points. The first one is how it, I think, if someone has never experienced depression or, you know, to that extent,
right,
I don't think it's easy to understand the desperation that someone experiences. It's,
so that's what somebody's told me exactly on this point. They said, because I haven't experienced it, I can't relate.
It's so difficult. It's so difficult to explain it. You know, when someone's feeling anxious and someone who hasn't experienced that degree of anxiety, would say, just stop it. Just do it. Just, you know, you know, don't listen to that voice that says, you know, you can't drive on the highway. You know, just say the speech. You know, what's the worst that can happen? But that's the point about our emotions, is that it's not rational. And you could tell someone.
So you're saying to me that this, that approach is actually, it's a rational approach by a rational person, but it's not going to work because a person in that situation is not rational.
And I think that sometimes a person who commits suicide is so overwhelmed by their own pain that firstly, they don't want to experience their pain anymore. And maybe they don't want to be a burden anymore. Maybe they're thinking that by committing suicide, it's going to make life easier for the people around them so that they don't have to experience the pity that is shown by other people towards them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe financial burden as well.
I think the financial thing today is a real factor.
Oh, very, very much so. You know, I think that often is a source of stress and depression and anxiety. But I do want to address that second point, Howard. You said that we need to deal with suicide in a very sensitive and caring way. And I think absolutely, I agree with what you're saying. But I also do think that there's a myth out there that if we do approach someone that we're worried about and say to them, are you thinking about taking your life? That is not the way to go about things. That is the way to go about things. It's so important not to beat around the bush. That obviously we need
to be so scared.
It's so scary. It is so scary.
You know, David, I had a situation and I hadn't met the person. He was a Twitter contact, but really I could see a tremendous guy, and he posted something that bothered me at the end of last year, and I reached out to him. I managed to get his number, reached out and said, you know, we don't know each other, but I saw your thing. I am a bit worried. And he wrote back saying, yeah, I've been diagnosed with an autoimmune thing, and depression is part of it. I'm battling. And I said, hang in there, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And the guy ultimately took his life. And I thought to myself, I keep thinking to myself, could I have done something different? What should I have done? I don't, you know, and we all live with this. What we see people posting things on Facebook, but we don't know if this is a real cry for help if it's just attention seeking. And we're very dismissive of people who are attention seeking. But it's very hard to get through. And then, of course, we always assume that, well, I don't know them that well. I'm sure they've got people around them who do, who can help them.
It's a very scary thing. And this idea that, you know, maybe that you're going to put the idea in someone's head if you say to them, are you suicidal? And very important question is, do you have a plan? And that's always
a very
important question to ask someone, because if they say, yes, I have been thinking about death, it's crossed my mind. It's so important to see if they've taken it to the next level, which is, have you got a plan? Have you thought about how you're going to do it? Have you got a date in mind? You know, that's because that's really a warning sign. Alarm bells must be ringing.
So can you go to a person and actually say or ask, are you feeling suicidal? Is that a wise thing to do?
I think it is the only way to go.
Really?
Because
it's like so hard to do.
And can
right. I mean, I hear it. It resonates. Yeah,
obviously, we want to stay calm as we can. And when you want to acknowledge this person's feelings, and we don't, clearly not going to just walk up to anyone and say, hi, you know, how are you doing? Mm. Are you suicidal? I think for me, it's important to look at the risk factors, which obviously we can identify. And then there are emotional signs, and then there are verbal signs, and there are behavioral signs that we can look out
what
for.
What are they?
So people, I think overall, if we look at the risk factors, anyone who's experienced mental illness in the past, or who are suffering from a chronic disease or terminal disease, or who have had past suicide attempts, or experiencing difficult life events like a death, or maybe huge financial difficulties, or who have a history of substance abuse, or who are isolated and alone, those are risk factors. So if we identify people around us who are experiencing these things, it's important for us to take note. Does that mean that everyone who experiences these risk factors are going to take their lives? Not at all. But that's the start, is to look at people who are at risk. And we look at their circumstances in their lives to establish that. And then we look at, you know, warning signs. And these warning signs can be emotional. And we look for, and it's so important to see if they're feeling depressed. And that would be they're not eating, or they, you know, as much as they, or they're losing weight, or they're putting on a huge amount of weight. They're irritable. They're angry. They're looking much more anxious. They've lost interest in things that they used to do. And then we look for verbal markers, if you want to call it that. They're talking about, feeling stuck, wanting to kind of, exit the world, feeling like they're a burden to people, saying that they have no purpose in the world. And then the other one is, you know, is behavioral kind of markers, where they isolate themselves, you know, not communicating with family and friends, this is often a sign, searching on the internet for, about suicide and about anyone's life.
But we can't know that.
Yeah, sure.
We can't know that. So, but I think, as Jenny said, David is brilliant. He's just given us the permission to have real conversations.
It's so important to have real conversations. So
it's interesting, David, because I'm somebody that can have a real conversation.
Yes.
But I didn't think it was okay to ask somebody that question directly. And I do feel like a weight is lifted off my shoulders if I can ask somebody that question.
Absolutely. And obviously look for these signs. Look for these warning signs.
Okay, you can't ask everybody.
Yeah, you can't ask everyone.
Yeah, no, good morning, are you suicidal?
Right.
You know, but that's not a greeting.
Yeah. But it's often, and again, you know, you can't force someone to speak about things. You can't.
Well, that's the other problem. And I know in many of these cases, or some of the cases where I've spoken to people that were, you know, close to the person that took their life. And the answer was, well, you know, we kept trying, but we couldn't reach them and they weren't interested. I just want to read you Mike Lubo's comment. He said, Howard, you're wrong. Suicide is not selfish. To get to the point of suicide takes great strength. Having been at that point myself, total helplessness, lack of support, and seeing no other way out. Mm. If the current situation and one trauma or crisis after another leads to suicide, at that time, suicide, we do not think of the world that is coping. Most people give depressants a glib statement, pull yourself together, it will get better, or just get on with it. I've been there. A lot of people who commit suicide, never show it overtly. They just do it, especially ego type 5. That is Mark Lubo. Ronnie says some people hate themselves and they don't see that their death as something that would hurt anybody. That to me is so sad, and I think so true. And Janine B saying, Howard, you cannot expect a person in that situation to be logical. I know this. I know all of this. I'm just wondering, and the reason that I raise this question is it worries me that there's ideation around it.
Listen, there are situations, especially amongst teenagers, when they hear about a famous person taking their lives, that there is a ideation around that, you know. There have been some terrible websites where teenagers have been almost encouraged to follow a process to killing themselves. I mean, absolutely horrendous. But I think all those messages are so important, and I think they're all saying a similar thing, which is when one is at that point of thinking about taking one's life, it is not rational. It's not a feeling of, well, or you don't have the space to actually start thinking in a very rational way. And again, it might seem selfish, but it feels as Anati was saying, a relief that it'll be a relief for them and a relief for people around them. So the thinking is not rational, and that's why it's so important to reach out to people.
Before it gets to that point.
Absolutely. And I think, it's, you know, the signs that we, you know, to look out for is when, you know, and I'm talking about when things are imminent, when people are really in trouble, is when you start seeing them almost saying goodbye to family and friends in subtle ways, when they're putting their affairs in order, when they're giving away or selling their precious possessions. Those are, and interestingly enough, there's a shift from someone who is in despair to suddenly this calm. You know, that's also a sign. So it's not easy to identify just one sign. You know, I think it's important to try and look for a pattern. But those are the signs when, you know, alarm bells must be going off, and where one shouldn't mix one's words. And that's when someone is doing that, I would say never leave that person alone. Really, they need help. And it's really about taking them by the hand. And you can take them to any emergency room, whether they've got a psychiatric facility or not. If someone is showing those signs, you don't leave them alone, and you take them by the hand, and you take them to get help. So I think that's the most important thing. People feel so alone.
You know what I think it is to some extent is it's our own lack of confidence in reaching out to somebody. Because we've got all this doubt in our own mind that says, well, is it my place to do it? Am I going to insult them? Are they going to laugh at me? Am I going to look like an idiot? Am I overreacting? Am I being too melodramatic? And I think these are our own voices that stop us from being real with people.
Yeah, and it is scary to be
because we actually make ourselves quite vulnerable when we do that.
We do.
There is a risk that you know, I've kind of got a standard line. If I've seen somebody and a friend or somebody and I'm just not happy with how they were, I'll send them a message and I'll say, "Listen, you can tell me to bugger off if you want, but it comes from a good place. Are you okay? Like, what's going on? I don't think you seem stressed to me, you know, or whatever it would be. It depends on my relationship with that person."
I love those words. Are you okay? Are you okay? And it's amazing how many people will take you up on that and actually slowly let you in. You know, someone who maybe wouldn't do that, you know, ordinarily. But it's just that inquiry, just that I see you. I see that I can see beyond.
And something is a bit off.
Yes.
Anonymous says it takes courage by the survivors. My mother tried about 15 times over a number of years to take her life. When her husband dies, I knew she wouldn't cope. I told her and I understood her pain and gave her permission to take her own life as long as she didn't tell me in advance. Unbelievable.
Wow.
I was leaving to return to South Africa in a week, and I hoped that she would take her life before I left.
Wow.
So that she wouldn't suffer on her own. She did, and while I was sad, I was relieved for her.
Wow.
Sure. What an unbelievable message.
And there's a person who understood that their mother was in unbelievable pain and somehow couldn't be reached, and that ultimately, you know, again, we're not condoning or saying that's the right way to go, but just understanding the pain that she was in.
Mm. And Melinda says, we also don't feel equipped to deal with the answer, so we don't ask the question.
Yeah.
I think also a very, very good point.
Well, you know,
and that's what I was going to say about, it's our own lack of confidence. Mm.
You know, I would say, you know, don't ever underestimate the power of listening. Of just listening. You don't have to give advice and solve problems for people. You don't have to say, well, why don't you try this? And I'm talking about in practical sense. Just listen. And I can't tell you, it's immeasurable when someone just is given the space these days to look someone in the eye and talk. So, you know, that is, as I say, that is just step one. How are you doing? And are you okay? And let them talk. And if you're not sure how to deal with someone, you know, we often say with helplines, you know, we should only phone helplines when we're in trouble. If you feel that you don't know how to approach someone, if you're not sure if a friend or family member is in trouble, you should phone a helpline. You should phone and say, listen, I'm not sure if my friend is in trouble. Please kind of have some ideas on how to go about it. So let's use helplines to help others as well. And to empower yourself.
I think that's very important. Mm. It's because maybe you don't have the confidence and the courage, and maybe you to even identify if this is something that that is something to be very concerned about. Phone a helpline, and of course, Chai FM has a 24-hour helpline. It's a toll-free number: 0800 24 24 36. 0800 24 24 36. That is the Chai FM helpline number. Use it. And use it to actually just chat to people about to chat if you are concerned. Time is 8:40. I'm chatting to David Abramson. He is a psychologist in a private practice. We're going to be taking a break. We're going to be speaking to John Steenhuisen. He's of course leader of the DA. We're going to be chatting to him about Sona, and then we'll come back and wrap up the conversation with David. I'm Howard Feldman. A very, very good morning. Time is 8:51. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. Joining me in a studio, David Abramson. And of course, we're going to wrap up the conversation that we've been having around recognizing when somebody needs help and when somebody might be at risk for suicide. Mike says, ask how many of those who have committed suicide have actually spent their life serving and giving others selflessly and don't receive back. We found it hard to receive and ask for help. Suicide seems the only way out.
It is the ultimate, vulnerability, is to actually put oneself out there, and say that we need help. But what's so ironic is that, you know, the majority of people need help. And we're not just talking about, you know, going into a psychiatric institution or going onto medication. You know, it's hard out there. It's really hard out there. And I would say that the majority of people, the vast majority of people, have very bad times and have some very low times. And I think it would be so affirming when people feel safe to actually start letting others know that they're feeling vulnerable, because the chances are the person you're talking to will understand, because they've been through their through difficult times, or might be going through a difficult time. So I think you know, the SMS that we got earlier about having real conversations is what it's all about. Don't be afraid to have real conversations and really connect with people.
What happens, and I think this goes to Melinda's point, what happens if you get an answer that you don't really know what to do with? Mm. Because we aren't equipped. Most of us are not equipped to deal with something, and we're almost afraid of the answer.
Well, I think as we said, I think the most important thing is to try and stay calm. And then so important to acknowledge the person's feelings. Even if you know, it doesn't seem rational to you, to acknowledge their feelings, that they are legitimate, and then offer support and encouragement. Don't have to fix things, but I'm here for you. I'm here to support you. in a non-judgmental way, and then offer them ways out. You know, how about going to see a professional? Can I set up the appointment for you? Here are different options. Why don't you go and, I heard about the Chai FM helpline.
Go make a call.
The call. Do you want me to sit with you while you do it?
Right.
But if it's more imminent, and as I said, you know, when you're seeing signs, when someone has a plan, remember that's the next step. Or if the person says, yes, I am, I have been thinking about it, about taking my life, and then they say that they do have a plan, then you know not to leave that person alone. Then it's so important to get their permission and really push them to get permission to call relatives, to call friends, or even to take them personally to an emergency room where they are can be helped and not left alone.
How do we deal with people on social media? You know, I from time to time see posts on Facebook. I've got Facebook friends who I don't know. I don't even know which country they live in. And you'll see something that is potentially quite disturbing. But it might be that this is sort of the way that person reacts or behaves. What do we do about something like that? What's our, not responsibility, because our responsibility, you know, is just to do whatever we can do.
Right.
But it isn't always easy.
Yeah.
And we're busy, and you can't necessarily reach out to everybody where you have where there's a Facebook or whatever post that is disturbing. What do we do?
Well, I suppose go with your gut. You know, certainly, you know, we are friends, in inverted commas, with so many people, and we don't know what's happening in their lives. We don't know, you know, how they're feeling in other areas of their lives except for this one post. So it's very, I suppose it's looking at things in isolation. But I don't think it could be amiss to just, you know, if you have the time to say, just read your post. Is everything okay? And just open it up for a potential response. Because it is very difficult to, you know, to understand someone's psyche and emotional state from one isolated post. But it is definitely worth putting it out there and saying, saw your post, are you okay? And seeing what the response is from there. But certainly if you're seeing repeated posts where people are talking about, you know, as we're talking about those risk signs and behaviors where they're talking about feeling helpless, feeling like they have no purpose in life. Where they talk about selling their belongings or, you know,
sorting out their affairs one way or another.
Then for me, for sure, that's definitely worth, you know, reaching out to that person.
Do you think that our communities are in tune enough? Our rabbis, our priests, our imams, I mean, are religious communities, obviously it's a very broad question, but is this something that is being dealt with?
You know, it's difficult to say. I think, you know, there's always room for improvement. I think there's always room for empowerment and for all our leaders, our religious leaders, our educational leaders, to educate themselves more and more, to understand what to look out for, to understand the signs and the risk factors. And then to create more and more opportunities for people to reach out. So that's why I think it's so important that people are aware of the initiatives like Chai FM. They really have created a institution, a place where one can go and speak confidentially, and really it's about using it and understanding that it can really, really help. And so I think there is work to be done, but I think, you know, I think there's always work to be done, but, I think work is being done as well.
Time is 8:58. Karen says, I just want to say thank you to Kathy. I was having a very bad day. She sent me a message. She sent me the best message and it changed my whole mood. And something exactly that. That makes the world of difference.
You know, sometimes we feel, even though we're surrounded by people,
we feel alone.
And when we get a message just to say, I see you, I hear you, I remember you, I'm keeping you in mind, it's so powerful.
Very, very interesting. Michael says the joke is that that those that haven't been there are counseling those that are depressed or suicidal. Mm. Mm. David, do you think that you have to have been there in order to counsel somebody?
I don't think you have to have been there, but I certainly think it gives you that edge, because it's that degree of empathy that you can feel, that you know, as you say, you know, people who haven't been there might not really understand this lack of clarity, this irrationality. So I think it could help on some level, but we have to be very careful if we've experienced anything similar to what in the person in front of us, that we don't project our experience into them.
Right.
That we
right.
allow them to have their own experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. The high life, the high line number again, 0800 24 24 36. 0800 24 24 36. Please use it. If you don't, need it for yourself, but that's also okay. If you are worried about somebody, if you want to chat about it, if this is something to be concerned about or not, these are the people to phone. I'm Howard Feldman. This is Where We Love and Leave You. David Abramson, thank you. Not an easy conversation.
Not an easy conversation.
But a very, very important one.
And thank you for creating the space so that we can have these real conversations.
Well, we'll keep doing exactly that. It's 9 o'clock. Have a great day.